Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
You can do whatever you want, mate, because I've hit the button. So if you want to,
you've got to stop doing that, mate. You've got to stop pressing the
button. It's tradition at this point. How else am I going to go into the intro? This is the intro.
But you realize how like utterly tense it makes me. It's like my sphincter is literally just going like it's pulsing, like, man. Because I don't know what's going on, and I'm obviously just like, the sword of Damocles, it will drop at any given moment.
I think it's part of the tradition. Yes, carry on.
As we started, was that I was like, you look hella fresh. I believe.
Thank you.
Kid would say. Because you've got like a new haircut going on.
Everything's new again. Yeah, well, I mean, as long as you've got the trim beard, you're looking suave. You don't need to.
Not at all. The reason that I have the microphone covering up my lower half of my face is just because it's gotten all like trampy. It's so trampy at the moment.
It's good. It's a good time. I went back to my old look because I refused to have lockdown dictate what my hair did. So I thought, no, I'm gonna reclaim it.
Also because of the fact that you live perpetually in 2010.
Well, /2003. I mean, it's... Whatever you need it to be. Josh said that to me the other day. He's like, oh, do you realize, like, I don't know, maybe it wasn't him. Someone reminded me that no one has hair spikes anymore. And I was just kind of like, I had this like realization of like looking around, like, and now I scan every crowd. And
my barb wasn't taking aim at your hairstyle. It was more the music tastes.
Well, there is that too. Although I'm loving it. And this is, we'll probably get onto some sort of game-based thing at some point.
People tune in to hear us just chat.
I'm loving the new Polaris album, which is just full-on metal style. Polaris is just phenomenal. Rina Sawayama for a bit of the pop stuff as well. Anyway, I should probably say that this is the Untitled Banter podcast, a gaming podcast. I'm your host, Scott Tailford, joined by Jules Gill.
Hey, guys.
And this is the UBP, which is the, yes, Untitled Banter podcast. Probably already said that. Not to worry, just hit the button, keep recording. We ask for everybody's questions, thoughts on whatever the hell they want to talk about for each week in gaming. Now, it's been a hell of a week for gaming this week. All sorts of different things on the business side of stuff, pulling back the closure of the PS3, the PS Vita stores. There's been demos for Resident Evil 8 and other things like that. So, first question from Gillen, if you can't beat them, bore them, who says UBP, good day. He said good day. I say we're jam hot. Anyways, any thoughts on the RE8 exclusive temporary time limited demos? Does its ephemeralness positively or negatively impact your desire to play Village?
Not in the slightest. I mean, like, it's the same with any exclusivity thing. I have witnessed people playing through the demo. I like what I've seen. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed your guys breaking it down because obviously you and Ben Roy had a little like chinwag about it and everything like that. So
it's a good time.
It's a very good time indeed. I feel like console exclusive demos are a weird choice, obviously, because I don't think that you're really actually getting that much. Like, I would never buy a console for the hopes of getting an exclusive demo. That doesn't make sense to me.
I like it as like a go-between. When you think of like how we used to get demos where it was just the vertical slice thing. And obviously as games have gotten bigger, it's harder to do them. And so like, you know, a lot of games just don't have demos. And I kind of wonder if this is one of the best go-betweens. I'm here and there on the actual time factor. Cause initially I was like, oh, it's half an hour. That's enough time to experience a demo. But once you're in there and you start exploring and you realize that it is just a chunk of the full game, that time flies by. It does cut off. That time flies by. I actually didn't get to the final screen. I know Ben Roy did. I got like a fair chunk of it, but then I couldn't replay it. I couldn't do it again. And I was like, I'm just going to wait until there's another half an hour stint.
So that's an interesting twist, isn't it? That you only get one shot. Like, you get your 30 minutes and that is it, sort of thing. I mean, does it affect it if you delete it, download it again? Can you go through it again?
I haven't tried that. I think people were saying you can get around it by just making, like, a different gamer tag. Like, you could, as long as you've got multiple accounts on your system, you could do that. I think you do need PS, on the PlayStation side, you need PS Plus to get it, though. Which I guess it is PlayStation exclusive.
Like, you just get one shot to go through. I think that as an experience, I think that makes the it more, feel more special. I would, to go back to the original question, like, get rid of exclusive to platform demos, but make them one shot, because I feel like that really does give people a different experience. If, for example, you didn't get through to the end credits, but Benroy did, and that means you've got two completely different things to talk about. He might miss stuff that you have combed over, like going through, like,
the one thing that I totally agree with people on is, like, because they made it available, I think it was on last Sunday night, there should be another half an hour one this Sunday night, but it's only available for 8 hours in total. So it's like, unless you log on in that time, you're going to miss it. And I think that they should make it, like you said, make it platform agnostic and make it so you just access your half an hour whenever you want. Like, that would be a way better way of doing it. But in terms of the game itself, it's stellar. Like, I mean, it's Resident Evil at this point, and the zombie werewolves are really fun to fight and watch in action.
You know that they've effectively, by doing this, by having one demo release at one time period and then another release later, they've created demos as a service. Like, it's that they've actually taken that step. That seems like a punchline to somebody's joke a couple of years ago.
Like a Devolver Digital conference or something.
Yeah, we've developed demos as a service.
Ultra early access. I mean, this is still like a vertical slice thing, because I guess it does cut off, but I don't know how much anything carries forward, because you're still picking up currencies and stuff that you can't use. So it kind of feels like you are getting part of the finished game. I want to return to demos being a thing again. And I feel like this is better than nothing, even though there's still some refinement to come.
Do you have like a favorite demo disc? Because I know that you're talking about the old PlayStation 1 and PlayStation 2 demo discs. They were the king of the cast.
We talked about them the other week with those little wallets, the little CD wallets. I had loads of them.
They're really expensive now. They're like super. Yeah, if you want to buy them and PS1 disc cases to like replace broken ones, they can sometimes go for like £7 just for the case.
There's a whole. I mean, I'm part of the. There's so many thoughts. I'm part of this whole insane nostalgia market, because I got a copy of Mortal Kombat 4 this morning on my N64. Do you know how much I paid for that game, Jules Gill?
Well, you better be telling me that you're not. Are you not advertising that you're using emulators, are you, mate?
No. Well, we can talk about emulators later. Right, I've discovered the whole world of emulators.
Because I saw a tweet that, and I was like, it's dangerous territory to be doing this on the podcast, mate. Well, remember the line. I own a copy of this game, so therefore I'm allowed to emulate it. That is the law. That is remember that, mate. That is the law.
Oh, yeah, I definitely own everything. But no, in regards to the N64 thing, I paid 51 English pounds to get my hands on. 1997's, hottest new property.
I'm sorry. Did you just say to me that for Mortal Kombat 4, arguably one of the weakest entries in the entire franchise,
you need to find out.
£51 for it? Is that including delivery? It better be included.
That was including delivery. Yeah. It was 45 by itself, and then six English pounds for the delivery to get it to my front door.
I think that we should, as a whole, everyone, we should pass an act which stops Scott having control over his own money. Like, we should include his wife in every discussion.
Well, look, I can't emulate stuff because that's all against the law. But then I can't go.
I've just told you it's against the law.
Crazy, dropping whatever money I need to drop this money to play these games properly, and I need to. Mortal Kombat 4 is the only gap in my Mortal Kombat knowledge, and I thought, well, why not line that up with the movie?
What
and then the movie didn't
to
come
leave out,
but...
though, mate. That's like saying it's like saying that the pavement slab that you've just replaced it comes with free dog feces. Like, I don't want it.
Look, if you want the full experience. At some point, you're going to have to come face to face with it. But in regards to...
Because Metal Gear Solid 4, if only it was that one. Mortal Kombat 4 is the one that has like Jack's amazing ending. Where he's
it's like, oh no! Jack's voice acting is horrible. And he's just like, this isn't a brutality. This is a fatality. He drops, I think it's Taven that he drops off a cliff. And the guy just goes, oh no! And it's just like, what is that, lads? That's not even, I don't know what that is. But we can get onto emulations a bit later, because I've been playing a bit of the old SmackDown 2. Don't you worry about it. It's been, what a stellar time I've had. Resident Evil Village, brilliant stuff. If anything, the demo further convinced me that it was awesome. Next question from Ruben. Close to 70,000 people have signed the petition to get Sony to approve Days Gone 2. Do you think these kinds of petitions actually work? I can't remember an instance where they actually changed anything in the games industry. P.S. Keep being awesome. Fisted hand.
Oh, indeed, yeah, man. The thing is that while these specific call to actions might not generate anything of themselves, it creates a dialogue because of the fact that they usually get picked up by media outlets and sources and therefore start to perpetuate the industry so that you begin a wider conversation. So, for example, while us signing this one petition will not go anywhere near Sony's like higher ups. It will be delivered to them. It will be like sent to them, but there's a good chance they won't read it. Unfortunately, that is just the way of the world.
Plus, I mean, the writing team, people have left the team now. Like John Garvin has left. He was the creative lead.
Exactly. So it's one of those things where like it might not get to the people who can actually influence change, but it does create a wider discourse and therefore that does promote change because as we've seen in the very recent example of the Sony backtracking about the PS3 and Vita support, the I can't remember if it's the CEO or the COO or I don't, one of the very higher ups said they made a mistake.
Oh, that was Jim Ryan's thing. Yeah.
And it was brought to their attention because of all of the negative spin that this sort of stuff brings. So I'd say it is still a worthwhile endeavor. Just don't go expecting your single signature to be the golden bullet to the head of the
list. Yeah. I think in Days Gone's case, like I said, a lot of that team has been separated. John Garvin, apparently he left a couple of years ago, but he was the dude that was heavily involved in Days Gone, creative lead, also wrote some like Siphon Filter and a couple of other games, Uncharted and stuff like that, I think. Golden Abyss. But yeah, I think in regards to that, you'll never get Days Gone 2, but you might sort of register interest in Sony going, we should do more zombie stuff, because clearly there's more there that they could have done more with.
The big shame is with Days Gone is the fact that, if we're being brutally honest, it was like...
is it the best 7 out of 10 game ever?
Do you know what? I was about to say that. It's exactly that thing that we were talking about. The best 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10 games. Like, there's a few problems with it, but it's an overall, like, it's a good ride.
It's way too long, but yeah.
But that ending set up Days Gone 2.
And they have a whole custom engine. Like, I don't know, something way better.
We can discuss the secret ending here, can't we?
I think at this point, the Days Gone fandom will know what happens. Yeah. And I guess if you just don't want to know... jump forward a few minutes. But
just the evolution of the enemy toward you get at the end of that. I'm like, cool, that actually sets up something which hasn't been done before because you've got the tech, you've got everything on the ground ready and working. Now, if you can add some intelligence into your enemies, then man, this game could be something special.
Because that's the thing, like we're talking about, you know, in Resident Evil 8, like I love that they've done werewolf zombies. I don't think that's been done. Like I was trying to think of any other fiction where you've had werewolf zombies where someone turns and all of a sudden they start bouncing off the walls and hanging off the ceiling and everything. I don't think that's been done. The nearest is like 28 days later or weeks later, but even they didn't climb up. I guess World War Z style zombies, but
the closest that you'd get is in The Matrix 3. Because you remember they go to the underground club and for no reason whatsoever, they go and start walking on the walls.
Inverted gravity.
And then somebody mentions that they're meant to be vampires. I'm like, when did vampires walk on walls?
If you're actually going in this territory, I can give you, as one of the only Matrix fans on the planet, I can give why that is.
Do it.
That's literally because you got to understand, in the real world, all those different gangs are hacking the Matrix to change all the rules. That's what the Oracle talks about in the second movie, where she says every time you come across a werewolf, a ghost, a vampire, a zombie, whatever, that's a program that is supposed to be following a certain set of rules that is refusing to follow those rules. So the assumption, therefore, is that any of those anomalies, and because the Merovingian talks about it as well when they finally have the conversation with him about how he's hacking all this code, he gives that slice of cake to that woman and he's like, I've coded this cake to do something. And so once you've kind of, it's a little bit of a leap, but once you've established that, you know, you can hack any of these rules, that sort of these different gangs are hacking the rules in their spaces and everything, then the assumption is that those gangs are inverting the rules of gravity in that club space because they're all breaking the rules of the Matrix.
Now that makes total sense. I will respond with just one question. why is it important to run on the ceilings in a gunfight where there's less cover?
The Wachowskis needed a cool thing. I don't know. They just, how do you redo the lobby scene? Make it upside down. Castlevania. Literally.
Oh, wait, actually, if they'd said this is a Castlevania, if one of them was playing like Symphony of the Night and then as the elevator opened, it was just like, this castle is an illusion, I would have been very much up for
the inverted lobby. Yeah. But yeah, in terms of the petition stuff, at least we've sort of registered interest in more of that stuff being done in the future. But I don't think we'll ever get Days Gone 2. I don't even think they would let go of the IP for someone else to do it. Yeah. Next question from Sawyer. Obviously, going forward, games are going to have a higher price tag, which I think will hurt Returnal. But as it seems, 2022 could possibly be a year bursting with games. Do you think we'll see delays so that they actually have a chance to sell well? I guess this is just like, do you, because we haven't, I don't think we've talked about it on the pod, but do you find yourself like just fundamentally waiting until a £70 price tag has gone down?
Unfortunately, I do. I operate on the policy that if we don't get it for review, either like if I can't talk to you or Ben Roy or Josh or any of the other gaming team about it, then I'm not really going to invest my money. We're very lucky and to be in a privileged position where we do get advanced copies of video games to play. And that does, you know, cut a huge amount of money. Like we save so much money from doing that. Like it's not the only reason why we do review games, but it definitely helps our bank balances. So I do find that I'm more reticent to pay full price for stuff, especially when you look at games now that A, are games as service, so they don't have all of the features plugged in at the beginning, or they promise DLC straight off the bat. And I'm just like, I'm just going to wait. Like, I'll wait until the Game of the Year edition because it will be half the price. It will have worked out all the bugs. And who cares? If I've waited like a year and a half for this game already, another 6 months to 8 months to a year, I don't care. I've got other games to play.
I'm definitely the opposite, and I'm the absolute maniac who does. I don't pre-order because I don't like them bolstering their pre-order figures. Like the whole idea that they're paid before the work comes out. But I do want to play at midnight, so I'll still preload at like half past eleven and play at midnight. Yeah.
I do like the fact that they actually changed the rules on that, that you could preload it before, because do you remember that? It's like, play on midnight, and then play at midnight, and then
just
have, like,
sitting waiting for it.
And it's like 3 a.m. It's like, oh, it's finally downloaded. Oh.
Just like, I was doing that with GTA 5. Like, it finally installed at about half past three in the morning, and I just fell asleep. I was just like, this is not even remotely worth it.
I did the same with Fallout 4. I went down into Bristol, and I queued up outside. It was already opening late. We weren't even sure if it was going to open at midnight for some reason, because it got to 1 o'clock before they decided to open the door. Went in there, got my game, went home, turned it, put it in, and I was like, oh, the install size for it and all of the other stuff. I was like, I'm just gonna go to bed. Like, and then because I was up late, I woke up late, which meant I had less time playing the game than if I'd just gone out at like 9 a.m.
Because I remember every time back in the day when I used to stay up and watch wrestling pay-per-views, my dad was always like, well, why don't you just tape it and watch it in the morning? You can just get up early before school. And I was like, Dad, it's not the same. Like, I need to be there at 2 a.m. when The Undertaker wins, otherwise it doesn't feel right. And I need to be there. So that's very much carried forward onto gaming, where I want, I guess not Nier last night, but I'm gonna get to Nier tonight. Last night I was waiting for the Mortal Kombat movie, which didn't materialize. It's a whole thing. I know. But in regards to trying to be there at the front of the queue, I'll be the person throwing the money down just because I just need to know. So much of my wage goes on games, just all types, whether it's old school N64 carts or brand new things.
I would actually like to posit a question to the listeners. Using the hashtag UBP, I want you to put down, and obviously don't feel free to not answer this if you don't want to. I want you to put down what you think your average spend each year is on video games.
Oh, God.
I just want to see what people do, because there are probably some people who don't spend that much. They only buy in sales. They do this like secondhand copies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I bet you there are some people that only buy new copies day one, full price. And I bet you it's a fair wedge of cash.
Yeah, I mean, mine will be pretty ridiculous. I might try and get an average ballpark figure for that and present that next week if we get enough people sending
in
their totals.
Do it. I'll try to do mine. So we'll compare our next week, shall we?
Because mine, I mean, next week is Returnal anyway, I think, which is the £70 thing. So it's like, even that is going to sort of knock stuff up.
Is Returnal the first one to be coming with this £70 price tag?
Yes.
I thought that Demon's Souls didn't come with one, but it has an Outriders dropped with one.
Returnal's the one that stands out, because to a lot of people, because it's Housemarque, because it's the dudes that made Resogun, and they're sort of known for making smaller games in terms of scope.
Okay.
A lot of people are like, okay, is this actually worth £70, because that is top tier premium thing. I feel like Spider-Man Remastered and Miles Morales and Demon's Souls were also pretty expensive, but they were also discounted fairly quickly per outlet, because it was the launch period and a lot of people were just selling off whatever consoles they had. So this is definitely the one that's being talked about the most.
So
I guess we'll wait and see. I'm pretty sure its release date is next week. Also, go check out on the YouTube channel. Josh has been playing it. We've got a review code thing through for it, so the review will be going up soon. There is a hands-on video for that too. I wasn't that bothered about Returnal, but then listening to him gush about it, literally said it's Control meets Hades meets Doom, and I was like, that's just the best combo of anything, really.
Some big three to stick together.
I know, and it's just like, I kind of forgot how much I loved Housemarque, because Resogun is brilliant. I forget the other side-scrolling thing that they did. I can't think of its name, but they do such great arcadey, particle effecty, fun arcade shooters, which so done in 3D. It's like, you know, imagine Doom combat, put the cameras over your shoulder, and oh my God, it's just, and it's a roguelike, so it's like Hades, and
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Anyway, a question from Kyle Gubert-Grabert, who says,
I hope that all three of those are their last names.
I'm hoping it's Gubert, like Christopher Lambert, who says, Mortal Kombat is nigh upon us. Sadly, it's nigh upon you. It's not upon us. What are some of your favorite game movies, guilty pleasures and all? I'll admit, for as terrible as it is, I don't hate the Super Mario Brothers movie. I have fond childhood memories seeing it with my dad. Which, you know, if you were a little, I used to love Batman and Robin. To be honest, I still do. But that's because I loved it as a kid.
Wait, Batman's the Robin with Mr. Freeze, isn't it?
Yeah. It's terrible. Ooh, it's horrible.
God, these
gut punch. These loose lips are immune to your charms, or whatever Robin says.
Oh, they're so...
The bit when he punches...
He's got the bat lipstick on.
Yeah, he's got the little fake lips on. That's how he gets... Batman's got the bat credit card. It's just, what else do you need? The bit when...
story, character developments.
Cinematography. Yeah. The bit when Batman punches the man at the beginning who's got like a drum in front of his face, and Batman punches him
straight through the drum.
And then he just hits him, and then Batman goes, good night. I thought that was the coolest thing in the world when I was 8 years old. I was like, yeah, you tell him, Batman. And that bit when they've got ice skates coming out of their shoes.
So this is your guilty gaming. Well, it's not even a game.
Well, I guess you need a gaming tie-in. I don't really have a guilty one.
Come on. You must do. There's so many, like, every single video game movie, let's face it, apart from maybe, and I can't believe that I'm saying this, like Sonic and Detective Pikachu.
Detective Pikachu is genuinely good.
They're decent movies, but I feel like you've always got to have the qualifier for a video game movie.
Yes,
and the reason that there is that qualifier is because of the fact that there are so many. Like,
the thing is with the guilty pleasure thing is that if I'm going to enjoy a movie, I'll just steer full bore into it. Like the 1995 Mortal Kombat is genuinely schlocky, great fun. Like I think it knows it is. I would hope that it does. Silent Hill is surprisingly solid, like in terms of the way that it's shot and everything.
Now, this is the thing. I totally agree with you on the Silent Hill thing. It's a great film, but unfortunately, it's just an absolute travesty when it comes to reflecting the actual franchise that it's from. Like, I actually had to look at this. I did a deep dive study into the opening 10 minutes of it, because it's the way that the cameras, the way that the cinematography is, the atmosphere is so Silent Hill that they actually nail that.
Like, yeah, totally. It's genuinely brilliant.
But the problem is that when you put in Pyramid Head and the sexy nurses, you completely lose the idea that they're...
It's like their band name.
Well, they're meant to be... Yeah, they're meant to be manifestations of James's psyche, the guilt for killing his wife. So they have no place belonging as the enemies for the protagonist of this
film.
So, like, that annoys me a bit.
It's nothing other than remember this thing from the games. Like, that's
but the skin ripping when that happens and it hits the wall of the church. Right, okay. Whoever, because if somebody could find out who did the Foley for that film... as in, who had the job of going, right, some skin is hitting the wall of a church door. I need to come up with a sound that reflects this. Get me my pig slot bucket.
Just like some sort of, I mean, we were talking about this the other day in one of the group chats of like amazing sort of Foley examples in gaming, because the Gears of War headshot noise is a cabbage being hit with a baseball bat.
Is it actually?
Yeah. That was on, it's either Gears 1 or Gears 2's on disc, had like a making of thing in the special features or whatever. And you can see them coming up with all these different gory sound effects. And there's one where they just put a cabbage on a table in a soundproofed room and then go like, right. And then someone just comes in and whacks it with a baseball bat. And that like big sort of noise is the headshot noise. And which I could then can't get out of my head every time I nail a headshot. I just see a cabbage being blown up, but it's near enough.
That's actually brilliant. going back to the question of what is the guilty gaming video game movie pleasure. Mm-hmm. For me, as much flack as I've just given the Silent Hill film and some other ones, the Super Mario Brothers films, I actually really unashamedly love the Street Fighter movie. it's Raul Jr.
I've not gone back to that in a long time.
Oh, his charisma is so good. There's one scene in particular which literally might be the best thing in the entire film. And it's where he just goes like talking about how I'm not an evil dictator. I just want the best for humanity. And as he's walking around, you see like this cityscape that he's got here. He's like, and I just will build the best utopia for humanity. Bisontopia. Like that. And literally when it finally zooms out, it's a giant skull-shaped city. And he genuinely believes that he's the good guy. And I'm like, love this.
That and Mortal Kombat are just, they're full. I mean, it's very much retroactive, retrospective banter, because at the time it was like, oh my God, what are you guys doing?
Yeah.
But I feel that's, to be fair, I've not gone back to the Street Fighter movie since I saw it as a kid, and even then all I wanted when I was a kid was a really good Blanka, and I was really disappointed by their Blanka, because I'm sure it's just a man in green paint. I remember thinking it is,
unfortunately, with
nothing like it,
prosthetics.
Street Fighter is another one like Mortal Kombat that needs to be actually done properly, although the Street Fighter TV series is all right, the YouTube one. Next question from Jacob Wright, who says, greetings my kind sirs. With Sony backtracking on the PS3 and Vita shop closing, is this the start of Sony acknowledging their legacy titles and making console backwards compatibility possible? Hope you are all well.
Oh, that is a tough question, because yes, deep down we would love to believe that this is the sort of the turning of the tide, that they're going to embrace the legacy that they were so quick to abandon even just a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I
don't know.
It feels to me that if you get things down to what is it, brass tacks to dollars and cents, it doesn't make sense for them to do that. They have to move forward, like, because of the fact that that's the only way they're going to make tons and tons of money.
I think you could do, I mean, you've seen like Nintendo do the Switch Online service where it's like, here's all these NES, SNES games bundled into a monthly fee. I feel like you could do like a PlayStation 1 or PlayStation 2 Spotlight thing and rotate titles through it. I get that it would be a nightmare license-wise for certain things like Tony Hawk's or whatever.
But I think that they're just trying to break free of the mold, because let's look at things like this. The PS5 runs its life cycle and we get the PlayStation 6. PlayStation 6 comes out and it doesn't have backwards compatibility. But let's say that the PlayStation 5 did. It caved after all that time. It's going to be an expected feature going forward. And as much as I would love that to be the case, it's not a PC. It's not built to be a one-and-done machine. It is meant to be an evolution of the process that comes at a cheaper price than a PC, because it doesn't have that accessibility to your game marketplace. Now, this is not me defending this principle. It is just what the format is.
Yeah.
And if I was in charge of Sony, as unpopular as this decision would be, I would say, look, unfortunately, we do have to let go of our legacy or nostalgia baiting at some point and just focus on the future, because otherwise we're going to be here until the end of time, rushing out the PlayStation 20 with people asking to play PlayStation 1 titles.
The thing is, I think that their middle ground is just making some sort of access point to those old games that isn't just go and find an old 20-year-old system. Like, just put anything out, and people, if there's, because there was a thing the other day, we reported on this on the channel, but it was an ex-Sony employee who's like on one of the lower rungs of the company that had been verified by some Reddit modders, was also vetted by Colin Moriarty over on Sacred Symbols, ex-IGN reporter Colin Moriarty, who was saying that a lot of what this dude was saying was lining up with what he knew as well. And this guy was just saying that in regards to backwards compatibility, it's one of the most requested features that is barely used, like according to their data. And they have all this telemetric data on how people play and what games they have and everything. And everybody talks about, oh, I want to be able to go back to this thing. Oh my God, I loved this thing when I was a kid. And we don't follow it through. And so that, like the brass, like you said, the brass tacks data doesn't support that. And so that's maybe just one of the harsh realities of it. I just think that as Sony as a company, like Nintendo, they sort of go, well, we do have this legacy. We're proud of it. We're not just putting a blog post up saying it's being discontinued. Yeah. We're going to give you some sort of access to it. And I think that's where they drop the ball. It doesn't necessarily need to be that I could put Smackdown 2 in my PS5, but you know, there should be something that lets you at least acknowledge Soul Reaver or whatever, like some sort of PlayStation bundle type thing.
I totally, thing is, the gamer in me totally agrees with you. And then the other,
I know what you mean too, though. Yeah.
It's like Astro's Playroom was the biggest sort of reference point, the touchstone of Sony's history as a development company.
Such a beautiful
and
game.
It was amazing because of that. Every single reference resonated with fans because it meant something to them and to Sony. Mm-hmm. So to see them go so cold on the idea of supporting their old titles is very strange.
But what I'll go on, sorry.
No, I was just going to say that what I propose just would be, if I was in, again, the leader of Sony.
Sony?
Yeah, I would just be saying to people, right, okay, cool. We're going to move forward with this console. We are going to stop doing backwards compatibility. But what we're going to do is we're going to do like the PlayStation 1 Mini, but we're going to do it, we're going to call it the PlayStation Legacy. And it's going to come bundled with like 200-300 PS3, PS2, and PlayStation 1 titles. And that would sell like hotcakes. And we done. And then we leave it because we point to the people and say, there's the legacy.
Totally.
There it is right there.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, there's loads of, on the Nintendo side, again, I'm blanking on the names of specific emulator consoles that you can buy. One of them's called like the Micro NT or something. They just plays.
Oh, yeah.
Or Super NT, I think it's called.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's got like the cartridge slots for NES, Famicom, SNES, and it has like GameCube capabilities or something like that. It's mad.
And it's like, that's a whole cottage industry of these really, really well done emulation machines where you just put in the original cartridge, and it upscales it. It puts it on HD. It makes it work on a widescreen TV. And you have all these different emulator-based commands over the top of it to make it all work. And that is something that the official industry just completely ignores. And it's like, if you had an official version of that, then that would assumedly do extremely well. And I don't know why they don't, other than the assumption based on things like the telemetric data saying that, oh, we shouldn't put this much money into R&D for an official, like you said, PlayStation Legacy, because assumedly on the business side, they don't think it would follow through. That's been the thing that Jim Ryan routinely keeps saying, is that no one plays old games, or that they, you know, then they say, oh, we believe in generations, we believe in moving forward. But it's just, at some point, your PlayStation, you clearly know it. Yeah. Like you said, Astro was full of it. So why not honor that legacy in some form? Next question from Travis Webb. For us two, what was our first foray into games journalism, and how did we end up at War Culture? I think we answered this a while ago on like a 25th anniversary thing for Chatty Faces.
Okay. Yeah, I think we did it on how we started at What Culture, like what we
might have been that, yeah.
But in terms of like the first piece of like video game journalism, I used to I kind of like powered around with a few people who were looking to set up like a video game review site. Mm-hmm. And we got like one press pass to like EGX one time.
Nice.
I remember meeting them there, and I was just suddenly put on the spot saying, go and interview this person because we might be able to get something from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember standing opposite this person who unfortunately had no idea what their video game was like, but they'd set it up for me. And I was just like, and I walked away thinking like, oh, it was Payday 2.
I met somebody
and spoke to somebody about Payday 2. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know about it at that point in time. And I suddenly walked away just going, that was actually quite fun watching right. somebody so passionate about a project tell me of everything cool about it. And I walk and me walking away going, yeah, I want to play that game. So I was like, oh, I enjoyed that. So that was probably my first video game journo experience.
That's cool. Because I, like I said, I think we covered this on a really old chatty face thing, but mine, I came in from music journalism. Like I was determined mm-hmm. to try and get my own website on. I had my own website for a while and then just music journalism. Everybody and their grandma has an opinion on music. So it just wasn't necessarily going anywhere. Even though I had managed to sit down with some bands, I'd camera equipment. I had this whole sort of YouTube thing on the go. I think those old videos are still on YouTube if you want to watch really young, old videos from me interviewing bands and stuff. But so eventually I just started applying for game journalism because my wife was like, well, you love games. Why don't you do game stuff? And I had like light bulb moment of like, yeah, I should do game stuff. I wouldn't shut up about them. And so like did this thing. I don't even know. It was gamesjournalismjobs.com. It was just this like archive site of anything that was going, and managed to get a position with New Gamer Nation, NGN. I don't even know if they're still going, but I think that was the first thing I did. But yeah, they were definitely one of the first ones anyway. And that was the first paid gig. It was like £5 to do this entire retrospective on the Metal Gear Solid series.
What?
Which was like a 6-8,000 word thing. I don't know if that's still online. I have no idea. But that was one of the first things I ever did. And then one of the only other paid things was getting Call of Duty Ghosts through as a press release copy. And I remember I was still working in retail and I had my phone ringing from this number that I knew would be calling me. And I was like, oh my God, the industry is calling me. Someone's ringing me to say that I've got this free copy. Like, how do I organize getting it to me and everything? But yeah, that was whatever year Ghosts was out, 2014, 2013, nice. Something like that. So yeah, that was all back then. That was just sort of like trying to find anyone that would pay me to write. And you just accept any old pricing structure back yep. then. And then yeah, everything sort of went from there. What Culture eventually noticed me because I had a bunch of different websites and articles online and stuff. But it's been a bit of a trip, especially with EGX, because me and your trip to EGX was like brilliant. But that was 2017, man. Maybe 18.
Like the difference between going there for the first time and going there the last time that we all went was just like night and day, man. Absolutely incredible.
It was brilliant. Well, me and you, when we played that Roll Cage thing, and we were supposed to be trying other games. It was Grip. We just ended up playing Grip over and over again, which was brilliant. So final question from Jenko. Which cancelled game deserves to be completed and released, and which release game should have been cancelled?
Right, okay. First off, let's give a big shout out to Jenko, by the way, because he's the artist that does my Live and Let's Die stuff.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, hello, mate. I see your cheeky little devil.
Mr. Jenko.
So what was the question again? I got so starstruck by him being here.
Which cancelled game deserves to be completed and released, and which released game should have been cancelled?
Oh, Star Wars 1313 or whatever it was. That needs to be done. Oh, no, wait. I've just ruined myself. It was the Star Wars Battlefront 3 one. That's the original version. That is the game that I still champion to this day needs to be finished because it's like 90% complete.
I know. On, and it's guys. Just, it only, it, yeah. I mean, it's just the way the mechanics with the vehicles and everything, the way those old pandemic Battlefronts worked, just give us more of them. I know that they made them backwards compatible, 1 and 2, but just do part 3. For me, it would be Legacy of Kain: Dead Son. Just to see what that is, just because it was a whole new character. It was like a weird sort of combat model, a little bit God of War-ish, but at least it was a continuation of Legacy of Kain. Maybe it would have kept the IP alive or something. If they still resurrected it today, maybe put it alongside an HD collection or something. Maybe there's a way.
You know what I'm saying, mate? That every time you talk about Legacy of Kain, all I hear is Nosgoth, Nosgoth, Nosgoth. And I just laugh so much because at what point do the developers think, right, we've got a nice single-player, story-driven, like narrative-based franchise right here.
Isn't it?
Let's turn it into a little PvP arena battle.
I remember Osley saying that it was actually surprisingly solid, like as a shooter. Actually, it was actually like a solid arena shooter, but just for me, on principle alone, I could not go anywhere near it. Maybe someday.
So the second part of the question was
which game should have been cancelled? I would cancel Anthem. Just because it got cancelled anyway. Because if you cancelled Anthem halfway through development, you would have freed up all those resources. And I would rather you expedited the release of the Mass Effect Legendary Edition or put more funds into Mass Effect Andromeda. Just do anything other than release Anthem because it's just been a catastrophic waste of time.
Well, I'm going to cancel Mass Effect Andromeda. So now they've got more money and resources to play with bringing out a new Knights of the Old Republic game.
Oh, and so there's a thing doing the rounds that the new KOTOR's remake is going to have like proper third-person combat, not the sort of like the kind of turn-based version that it has now. Do you not want that? Do you want more turn-based?
Well, now how am I ever going to be able to cheese Bendak Starkiller or whatever his name was? Do you remember that? At the very beginning of the game, you went into the arena battle thing and it was kind of like you could work your way up. And usually games don't usually give you like a Pit Fighter Arena Championship side mission until later on in the game where you're powered up enough to actually go and grind to be able to beat them. Here it was like, if you leave this planet gets destroyed, spoilers, so like there's no point you even going, like you can't go back to it. So I was like, well, I guess I've got to stay here and try and beat the world famous super coming out of retirement champion,
the world heavyweight champ.
And he literally has these two blasters, right, that if you are unprepared and don't have like a Mandalorian blade or something to like deflect it with, you'll literally just get killed in 3 seconds. I'm just like, so the only way to do it is to cheese him by running around in a circle, stopping every once in a while to do a rapid fire shot, hopefully you get some damage, run away and heal again.
If they can do it like Final Fantasy VII Remake, where it's just, you can pause, you can hop between people, but it is live action, I would take that. I'm curious what this, because I go back and forward on whether we need remakes of classics anyway, but I guess I can admit that maybe KOTOR is a little bit dated. I don't know if you're with me or not. I don't know if I fully agree with that, but I can see if you're a new Star Wars fan and you pick that up, maybe it doesn't feel like the most streamlined thing.
You are totally right. I mean, if I take my old man nostalgia goggles off and I was saying, hey kid, do you want to come and play this game from my past? And they go, that is very janky. I'm like, yeah, true. Yeah,
there is a lot of like grounds to be made up, and I guess they can do it with like a bigger budget and do the, I just want new, better Star Wars games. It's been too long. And was it in KOTOR? I'm trying to think of this when we were talking. Is it in KOTOR where you drive that ship and you've got to set a time trial thing?
Swoop racing.
Yeah.
I hate that mini game. That is the most infuriating. How is a game about racing feel so slow and then so fast in the blink of an eye that it's just kind of like,
I remember like child me just couldn't get it at all. And I went back through KOTOR a few years ago and I did manage to actually play it, but I was like, oh man, if you did that now, you could get Criterion to do it or something. Like just sort of fold in,
sick.
You know, do like an actual cool little, bring back Star Wars Racer. Just do the old things that me and you remember, but do them better for new audiences with fun mechanics. For now, this has been the UBP Untitled Banner Podcast. I've been your host, Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everyone for submitting their questions, and we'll catch you all next week.
UBP.
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 Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.